This morning, America's First News starts right after this.
When shopping for car insurance, consider this. Geico has been saving people money on car insurance for over 75 years. So if you're serious about savings, it's simple. Go to geico.com. After 75 years, they know how to save you money.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
More pressure on President Trump. Good morning. I'm Mike Gavin in for Gordon Deal along with Jennifer Kashinka. It's Monday, August 14, 2017, and here's what we have for you this hour.
A statement from the White House Sunday singled out white supremacists and other hate groups in the aftermath of the deadly attack on protesters in Virginia on Saturday, but some are calling it too little too late.
Authorities say three people at an auto race in Wisconsin were shot and killed at point-blank range. Police are searching for a motive and the suspect.
Senator Marco Rubio has reportedly been under increased security recently after the government uncovered a possible threat to his life.
And on a much lighter note, why a lackluster summer at movie theaters could be more than just a blip on the radar.
The big three exhibitors, AMC, Regal, and Cinemark, have all had a really bruising summer on Wall Street. Their stocks have really steadily declined because you've seen a number of big titles like King Arthur and Transformers and The Mummy really miss expectations, and in some cases, just outright flop.
Wall Street Journal reporter Eric Schwartzel will have more on the summer of duds and what this means for going to the movies later in the hour. President Donald Trump, in the wake of deadly weekend violence at a white supremacy rally in Virginia, is facing pressure to break decisively with such nationalist groups that largely backed his campaign and presidency, or risk a fraying of his governing coalition. The rally erupted in violence in Charlottesville on Saturday, and a woman was killed when a driver allegedly mowed down a group that had gathered to counter messages from the white nationalists, some of whom were self-described Nazi sympathizers. Dozens were injured in the car attack. Later, two state troopers monitoring the demonstrations were killed when their helicopter crashed. The president initially said the altercations came from many sides of the event, which leaders from both parties said seemed to improperly spread blame equally between the white nationalists and the counter-protesters. Then on Sunday, the White House issued a statement saying Mr. Trump, quote, condemns all forms of violence, bigotry, and hatred, and of course, that includes white supremacists, KKK, neo-Nazi, and all extremist groups. Vice President Mike Pence spoke publicly at a joint news conference with the president of Colombia in Cartagena.
These dangerous fringe groups have no place in American public life and in the American debate, and we condemn them in the strongest possible terms.
Meanwhile, Republican Senator Lindsey Graham appeared on Fox News Sunday.
If I were president of the United States and these people showed sympathy toward me and my agenda, it would bother me, and I would urge the president to dissuade them of the fact that he's sympathetic to their cause.
Pointed condemnations of such groups also came Saturday from GOP leaders like House Speaker Paul Ryan, as well as Senate conservatives such as Ted Cruz of Texas and Orrin Hatch of Utah. Meanwhile, tensions remained high on Sunday in the aftermath of the deadly violence in Charlottesville. A planned Sunday night vigil at the University of Virginia in remembrance of Heather Heyer, who was killed Saturday, was canceled due to a credible threat from white supremacists, according to a statement from the organizers. But marchers gathered anyway, honoring Heyer at the downtown cross street where she was killed.
Lean on me.
And here's the organizer of the vigil, Scott Huffman.
I knew it was what we had to do. We had to rally against hate.
Earlier, Jason Kessler, the local organizer of Saturday's Unite the Right rally, tried to hold a news conference earlier in front of Charlottesville City Hall, and it quickly descended into chaos. Protesters blared horns, rang bells, and shouted, "Murderer!" Kessler's voice was drowned out. He fled, but was tackled, and bedlam ensued before police officers intervened and pulled him away. It was unclear if he was injured. It was another moment of mayhem for the city, home to the University University of Virginia, and now a battleground for clashes pitting white supremacists, neo-Nazis, and other alt-right groups against counter-protesters ranging from Black Lives Matter to anti-fascists. A 20-year-old Ohio man named James Fields Jr. is being held on suspicion of second-degree murder after allegedly ramming a car into the crowd of protesters Saturday, killing Heyer and injuring 19 others. A deadly night at the racetrack in Wisconsin as authorities say three men were shot and killed during an auto racing event. Kenosha County Sheriff David Beth says authorities responded to the Great Lakes Dragaway in Union Grove around 7 p.m. after receiving reports about shots being fired. Union Grove is about 25 miles south of Milwaukee.
A black male in his 20s, cut off blue jean shorts, a black hoodie sweatshirt in his 20s with a shaved head on the side and hair up on top, came up and shot three people here.
The three men were shot by another man at point blank range near a food vendor. Beth said at the news conference last night, no suspects were arrested and no one else was injured. The sheriff also said law enforcement do not know who the suspect was or what his motive might be for killing the three men, whom Beth described as being in their 30s and from Aurora, Illinois. Authorities are hoping to talk with witnesses and look through video footage. The sheriff's office estimated that more than 5,000 people were at the raceway for an event known as Larry's Fun Fest, which was to include drag racing, tailgating, live entertainment, and a car show. It's 12 minutes now after the hour. On This Morning, America's First News.
Prices are for base buildings only. Do not include windows, doors, or accessories. Warning! Don't let your business get left behind in what is likely to be the biggest economic boom in recent history. If you need to build to grow your business, call General Steel today. Steel prices are expected to rise, but you can still lock in your price on a General Steel building if you call now. For example, a 40 by 60 foot building is still less than $25,000. Even an 80 by 150 foot building is under $99,000.
Imagine 12,000 square feet for under $99,000.
This building is designed for your needs, no wasted space. And you get the General's quality and 50-year structural warranty at a price you can afford. You can still save as much as half the cost and time of conventional construction by calling General Steel today. As much as half. So don't let rising steel prices put your project out of reach and stop you from making your company great. Call now. 877-61-STEEL.
It's not too late. Call.
877-61-STEEL. That's 877-617-8335.
Gordon's off. I'm Mike Gavin, making our way through a Monday together. Well, according to multiple news outlets, Florida Senator Marco Rubio has been under increased security the past 3 weeks after a possible threat to his life was uncovered by the U.S. government. The alleged threat, which federal authorities could not confirm as authentic at the time, was believed to come from the ruling party leader in Venezuela, with whom Rubio has publicly feuded. The possible threat led Rubio to take on stronger security detail, including U.S. Capitol Police. More on that story as more details surface. Meanwhile, you might recall that during the Republican presidential primary last year, candidates Donald Trump and Marco Rubio swapped nasty insults. Mr. Trump referred to Mr. Rubio as Little Marco, while Rubio countered by calling the billionaire a con artist. Fast forward to this year, and the president and the Florida senator have actually developed a friendship. It's a story from Ledge King, Washington correspondent at USA Today. Ledge, this is an interesting development, isn't it?
Well, I mean, politics make strange bedfellows, as the old saying goes. It's been a relationship forged on mutual benefit. Rubio has been frustrated in the past that he hasn't had an ally in the White House to enact or pursue the kinds of things he wants, especially on foreign affairs. And in Rubio, Trump sees somebody who's well-versed, articulate on issues that he may not be that well-versed on, areas like the Western Hemisphere, specifically Cuba and Venezuela. Rubio's been an important ally to him on that front.
Has having an ally in the White House reinvigorated Rubio's desire to be a senator?
Yeah, I mean, there are a number of things that happened. After his presidential campaign, he was not going to run for re-election. He changed his mind and decided to run for re-election. He became he is a chair of a subcommittee on foreign affairs, so he's got some legislative weight. But a lot of the things that he talked about in terms of frustrating terms was that the Republicans wanted didn't happen because weren't going to happen because Obama was in the White House. So having somebody in the White House has made him essentially more effective. There's a better prospect that things he wants done are going to get done.
You also said that although he may disagree with President Trump on issues, he does not publicly criticize him.
He's been careful not to go out of his way to do that. There have been a number of other Republican senators that are feeling their weight in this issue. I mean, John McCain is probably the most obvious, but people like Susan Collins, people like Jeff Flake of Arizona, Lisa Murkowski of Alaska, Ben Sasse of Nebraska, have been more and more vocal about their criticism. Rubio doesn't do that. He sort of knows that he's got a friend in the White House, and why go out of his way to complicate the relationship, especially with a president who values loyalty.
We're speaking with Ledge King, Washington correspondent from USA Today. So the cynics want to know, how much is all this a ploy for a Rubio 2020 run?
He has said without any question that he is not going to be a candidate for 2020, and I don't see him doing that. I mean, it would have to be an implosion at the top, which is not out of the question, but as long as Trump's on the ballot, or I don't think he's going to do it. Now, 2024 is a different issue and beyond, because he's young. He's only 46. He's got a big future in front of him. So I expect he will run for president again, but not in 2020 again, unless something major, there's a major shakeup.
You mentioned that Rubio has been helpful in China, Venezuela, and Cuba. Where do they not agree?
Well, there's been less of an issue on that, except, well, I will say one key area is Russia's involvement in the election. Rubio, who's been a hawk on Russia, makes no, has no question that Russia meddled in our election, as the intelligence agencies of the U.S. have already concluded. And he's been firm about that. As you know, the president has been a little bit more open to that question. So he's been firm on the Russia question. That's probably the key area where they've disagreed.
All right. Thanks, Ledge. Ledge King, Washington correspondent at USA Today. 20 minutes after the hour now on This Morning, Jennifer Koschenka is here with more of America's First News.
Like, as President Trump remains out of sight and silent, pressure is mounting from both sides of the aisle for him to explicitly condemn white supremacists and hate groups involved in a deadly race-fueled clash in Charlottesville over the weekend. Charlottesville Mayor Michael Signer.
The time has come for this to stop. This should be a turning point. People are dying, and I do think that it's now on the president and on all of us to say enough is enough. This movement has run its course.
Trump, who has been at his New Jersey golf club, is set to make a one-day return to Washington today to sign an executive action on China's trade practices, but he'll likely be unable to escape questions and criticism for his initial response to the violence, for which he blamed bigotry on many sides. The young man accused of plowing a car into that Virginia crowd was fascinated with Nazism, idolized Adolf Hitler, and had been singled out by school officials in the ninth grade for his deeply held radical convictions on race. A former high school teacher of James Fields Jr. says Fields had a keen interest in military history and Nazi Germany. China's Commerce Secretary today issued an order banning imports of coal, iron ore, lead, and seafood from North Korea, effective starting tomorrow as Beijing moves to implement UN sanctions announced earlier this month. The UN sanctions must be implemented 30 days after the resolution was approved on August 6th. Justin Thomas closed with a 3-under par 68 at Quail Hollow to emerge from the shadow of Jordan Spieth, his longtime friend, and capture his first PGA major. Thomas called it a great win for him and his family.
I just didn't get flustered. I felt like I just kind of kept everything in front of me. I know how hard doubles are to make up out here, so I tried to avoid those and was able to make a lot of birdies, so it was great.
The 24-year-old is a third-generation PGA pro and joined seven others who won the PGA whose fathers were pros. Thomas's father is also his coach.
Looks like golf skills might be genetic.
Maybe he'll have some kids. Make it four.
There you go. Welcome back, by the way, Jen.
Thank you.
Good to see you. A relaxing beach vacation
it
for
was
you.
Jersey Shore. Yeah. Wonderful.
Well, the good thing is nothing happened in the news while you were gone. Completely completely calm. It's August, right? Nothing happens in August. Uh-huh. Everything was completely calm, and we're just going to be digging around for stuff to talk about today. So let's get to that.
Okay.
Thanks very much. 23 minutes after the hour now on This Morning, America's First News. This travel update is brought to you by Lexington. Hello Rewards is our way of saying thank you to guests at Lexington and Red Lion Hotels. Enjoy the best rates and personalized perks. Book your hotel stay today. Well, buying airline tickets is getting even more dastardly. Basic economy fares are spreading nationwide. As Wall Street Journal travel columnist Scott McCartney writes, only in the increasingly complex airline world is there a big difference between basic and standard. Scott, what's happening here?
So basic economy started out as a big airline response to the little discounters who charge really cheap fares and then load you up with fees for checking bags or carry-on bags or all that kind of stuff. So United, Delta, and American said, how can we match that, essentially? And they came up with this concept of basic economy. They're fares that are basically $30 to $50, sometimes less, $20 less than what would be considered the standard fare. For that savings, you lose the ability on United and American to bring an overhead bin bag on board. You lose advanced seat assignments. You board with the last group. There are just a whole lot of restrictions on it. You can't make same-day flight changes. There's absolutely no refunds, even with a penalty fee. They're very stripped-down basic transportation fares. And what the airlines found was it was pretty cool to advertise a lower price than you might otherwise advertise. And guess what? More than half of the customers will trade up, will buy up to more expensive coach fares that don't have all those restrictions. So they've rolled it out system-wide. United has, Delta has, America's in the process of rolling it out across their domestic system. They're also starting to use them internationally. And essentially, it's becoming the new lowest price. And a lot of travelers are upset because now they feel like they have to pay a fee, an upcharge, buy a more expensive coach ticket just to get the sort of standard amenities, if you will, that they've always gotten in the past.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal travel columnist Scott McCartney. So, Scott, what more are coming?
Yeah, it's really the rollout system-wide, and I think it's a significant shift because this started as a tactical response to discount airlines, and now it's simply an upsell. They're using it in markets where there is no discount competition, and basically saying, hey, this is our new standard lowest price. And if you want something more, and more used to be basic, more used to be included, but now it's not included. If you want something more, you got to pay us $30 or $50 more for each flight.
All right, great news. Thanks, Scott. Wall Street Journal airline columnist Scott McCartney. 30 minutes after the hour now on This Morning, America's First News.
When a state ranks among the top 10 in the country for major new and expanded facilities, that's pure growth. When it's tops for three straight years, that's pure Michigan. Long known as a world leader in the automotive industry, Michigan is also a leader in defense, cybersecurity, mobility, agribusiness, and aerospace. In fact, CNBC rates Michigan among the top 10 states in the country for business. To learn more, visit michiganbusiness.org. Small business never stops moving, so Dell's U.S.-based small business technology advisors are trained to keep up. Just call 877-BUY-DELL to get connected with an advisor who will get to know your business and tailor a solution with Dell PCs powered by Intel Core processors that is right for you, so you can focus on your business and leave the tech questions to Dell. Call 877-BUY-DELL to get in touch with a tech advisor today.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter @ThisMorningShow. Like us on Facebook or send us an email. This Morning at CompassMediaNetworks.com.
It's 34 minutes after the hour. Mike Gavin in for Gordon Deal on this Monday, August 14th. Here are some of the stories we're following for you today. A vigil for the victim of Saturday's deadly violence in Charlottesville, Virginia was called off due to threats, but some ventured out to mourn anyway. A night of racing in Wisconsin turns deadly after three men are shot and killed at point-blank range. In sports, 24-year-old Justin Thomas wins the PGA Championship, and the teenager who wants to run for governor in Kansas, which, for some reason, he's completely allowed to do. More on that in about 20 minutes. Well, if you went to the movies this weekend, there's a good chance you saw Annabelle Creation, a spinoff of The Conjuring, which pulled in $35 million at the box office, making it easily the top film and giving the lagging August box office a shot in the arm. However, an overall decline in attendance at the movies this summer has put theater chains in a weak position in the eyes of investors, especially with expectations of upheaval in the industry. Wall Street Journal reporter Eric Schwartzel says you can blame a steady stream of lackluster major releases. Eric, what's happening at the movies?
So the big three exhibitors, AMC, Regal, and Cinemark, have all had a really bruising summer on Wall Street. Their stocks have really steadily declined because you've seen a number of big titles like King Arthur and Transformers and The Mummy really miss expectations, and in some cases just outright flop. And traders have responded to that, and the stocks have fallen. But what we found was that investors also think that this drop in attendance has exposed the longer-term problem facing the theaters, which is that the studios are inevitably going to start shortening the exclusivity window the theaters have to show movies. And that means that consumers will at some point be able to watch first-run movies in the home sooner than they do now. And it's really unclear what those deals would look like, if the theaters would get a piece of it, and what that would do to attendance overall.
So why the significant drop in the box office?
Yeah, I'd say the economy is good and the movies are bad. Every year is a little cyclical, right? It'll go up and down a couple percentage points. And that margin of error really seems to be if the movies resonate or not. And this summer we had a number of movies that just did not register with audiences. And, CEO told me that if you moved the movie Beauty and the Beast, that live-action movie Beauty and the Beast, 1 month later on its release schedule, it would be a much different summer because that movie made $500 million, but it was released in March, and it was really good for the first quarter, but that second quarter that has long been that summer movie season corridor didn't have any breakout hits like that. In fact, only one movie this summer grossed more than $400 million, and that was Wonder Woman.
We're speaking with Eric Schwartzel from the Wall Street Journal. Eric, is there any concern among investors that this summer may be the new normal?
I don't know if investors think this will be a new normal. I think that they do understand that this is cyclical. Some summers will be better than others, and it really does come down to the movies. But I think that every time you have a summer like this where everyone's just scrutinizing attendance totals and how specific titles are performing, it just really exposes the cracks in the foundation that seem to be forming when it comes to how viable this industry is as a long-term prospect.
Is anybody saying that there will be no more theaters in the future?
I definitely think people expect more to be piped into the home in the years to come. The great analogy that exhibition executives like to make is to restaurants, saying, you know, everyone has a kitchen in their home, but there's still a market for restaurants. And what they're counting on are, even as more and more streaming services proliferate and more people can, you know, catch these movies while staying home on their couch and not paying for a babysitter or, you know, an $8 bucket of popcorn, that there still will be something about the premium experience of the movie theater that drives them to see movies in that way. And that's why you see a lot of theaters across the country undergoing these costly renovations where they put in these recliners or they offer full menus of dine-in options because they want to have more of an appeal, more draw to people who sit at home and think, you know, well, why would I go out and pay, you know, $10 to $15 for a movie ticket when I can just stay here and watch Netflix?
That's a good question. Thanks, Eric. That's Wall Street Journal reporter Eric Schwartzel from the Journal's Bureau in Los Angeles. 21 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Well, experts say the future of video games is mobile, and with that comes increased access to you through notifications and other nudges on your smartphone in the hopes that you'll play more and buy more upgrades. More now from our own Gordon Deal.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal technology reporter Sarah Needleman. She's written a piece entitled Mobile Games Most Valuable Tool, Access to You. Boy, some of these numbers in this story are just eye-popping. Explain what you looked at. Give us the basic setup here, Sarah.
Sure. Well, we looked at the frequency in which people play mobile games and the amount of time they're spending on a daily basis. And in some games, like you said, it is pretty mind-boggling. Electronic Arts' game, Star Wars Galaxy of Heroes, according to the company, people spend an average of 162 minutes a day playing that one. The average, based on survey data, is more like 45 minutes a day playing mobile games, but that's still a pretty large amount of time, and it's definitely gone up over the years.
That's almost 3 hours a day, that Star Wars game. On their phones, these people are doing this?
Phones or tablets, yes. It's a mobile game. It's meant for playing on a smartphone or a tablet, and it's meant to be played in short bursts. So these aren't necessarily people playing for 162 minutes straight.
Yeah.
They may be opening the app, playing for 5 or 10 minutes here, closing it, then opening it up again later throughout the day whenever they have idle moments.
Wow. And as you mentioned, these notifications that come across from these apps onto your phones are really catchy.
Right. They're really helping to drive up those numbers that we just talked about, because throughout the day, you may get notification on your phone saying, hey, your army is being raided, or open the app right now and get free gold coins, or you haven't been playing in the past couple of days, here's what you're missing. They're all different sorts of messages designed to drive you to open up the app. And even if you don't get the message, but you're aware that, you know, some games have a rule, you open the app every day for a certain amount of days in a row, and you get some sort of a prize. So the notifications are just icing on top of the cake.
Wow. What about spending within these apps?
Well, the more time you play a game, the more likely you are to spend money, because you're just so engaged in the game. You're really enjoying it. And you may find that if you spend a few dollars, you could advance to a certain level more quickly than you could otherwise. Or maybe you're just really having so much fun that you want to decorate your character. You want to give a special outfit or a special weapon that costs money. So just the more time spent, the more you are likely to spend. And so that's really what's motivating the companies to drive up engagement and to remind you to play.
Wow. We're speaking with Wall Street Journal tech reporter Sarah Needleman. She writes a lot about gaming, and she's written a piece entitled Mobile Games Most Valuable Tool, Access to You. That 162 minutes, I'm still having a hard time getting past that for Star Wars Galaxy of Heroes. You said there's a lot of these folks are really enjoying it, but that much time, almost 3 hours, strikes me as addiction, no?
Well, like I said, it's in piecemeal. It's not all at once. It's little blips throughout the day. And this is a particularly immersive game. I mean, we're talking about games that have console-quality graphics and features. It's not just these little casual games that you play on your phone. Some of the ones that we're talking about, and Star Wars in particular, they're really immersive, and there's a lot of things to do in them. And there's a lot of social features, too. You're forming teams, and you're playing with other players, and you don't want to let them down.
That's Wall Street Journal video game writer Sarah Needleman with our own vacationing Gordon Deal. Just about 13 minutes in front of the hour now on This Morning. Coming up next, another check of today's top stories. 9 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning. Jennifer Kashenka has returned with more of America's First News.
Like protesters chased out one of the organizers of Saturday's Unite the Right rally yesterday, Charlottesville remains tense after deadly clashes between white nationalists and those opposing them. Jason Kessler, a 33-year-old organizer of the rally, was booed off stage as he tried to address reporters.
Nazis go home!
protesters forced Kessler to retreat behind police. The scene unfolded a day after Charlottesville descended into chaos and a car smashed into a group of protesters, killing 32-year-old Heather Heyer and injuring 19 others. Vice President Mike Pence is demonstrating the delicate balancing act that has thus far defined his term, walking a line during a trip to Latin America between the region's opposition to possible U.S. military intervention in Venezuela and President Trump's surprising refusal to rule out that option.
Working with free nations across this hemisphere, the United States will continue to bring the full measure of American economic and diplomatic power until democracy is restored in Venezuela.
Pence declined to rule out possible military action against Venezuela's president, but stressed the U.S. would much prefer what he called a peaceable solution to the growing political and humanitarian crisis. Lawyers are expected to make closing arguments today in a trial concerning allegations that a former radio host groped Taylor Swift backstage before a concert in Denver. And competing allegations, the singer's mother and her radio liaison set out to destroy the DJ's career after the photo op took place. A federal judge on Friday determined that former DJ David Mueller didn't prove that Swift personally tried to end his career, but identical allegations against Andrea Swift and Frank Bell are expected to go to jurors.
We prayed to see our girl again. The contact started small. She wanted permission to move into the doll.
The Conjuring spinoff Annabelle Creation was the winner at the box office this weekend, bringing in $35 million. Warner Brothers can celebrate not only the month's biggest debut, but also having the week's top two films. Dunkirk followed in second place with $11.4 million.
I have not seen Dunkirk yet. I definitely want to see it. But there's pretty much all the movies that have come out this summer. There's not one besides Dunkirk that I actually really, really want to go to the movies to see.
And that is the problem and why box office is waiting.
And I'm not like Gordon. I actually go to see movies. But, you know, unless it's had a minion in it this summer, there's really been no drag for me to go to the movies whatsoever.
Not a lot of great stuff.
Thanks very much, Jen. 6 minutes in front of the hour now on This Morning, America's First News. It's a popular sentiment these days to say we want our elected officials to be outsiders, free from the stains of too many years of working in big government. Well, the newest candidate for governor in Kansas certainly fits that bill. He's 16 and still in high school. Jack Bergerson has filed to run as a Democrat in the 2018 race for governor of Kansas, saying he wanted to give people another option. And it doesn't faze him that he won't even be old enough to vote in the election. The murky laws governing who can run for election in Kansas are why Bergerson can legally declare himself a candidate. Spokesman for the Kansas Secretary of State's office says there's nothing on the books that lays out anything about who can run. No age, no residency, no experience, nothing. The teenager said he wants to radically change the healthcare system and would support legalizing marijuana for medical purposes while being willing to explore legalization for recreational use. But he's conservative on gun rights and supports laws that allow people to openly carry their weapons. Oh, and in case you were thinking he might try to shore up his lack of experience with a more experienced lieutenant governor, well, you'd be right. His running mate will be classmate Alexander Klein, who is 17 and will actually be able to vote in the election since he'll be 18 by then. That's a wrap on this hour. For Gordon Deal and Jennifer Kashenka, I'm Mike Gavin. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News.